Just let me jump in again. We welcome your comments. I meant to remind them.
Oh, yes.
Just speak up when you make a comment. And we are going quick through this, but we do want your questions and comments. So if you need to slow Lambert down a little bit, feel free to do that. But speak up so that everybody can hear the question. Thanks.
Anyhow, I frantically called around, and everybody had left for church except my great friend Rob Walker. He drove all the way down and picked me up and took me back to limousine service. Last week when we were in Job, we found a little passage where Job said that he would like to take fresh melted snow and soap and wash away all of his sins, if that were possible. The very next day I got in the mail from a friend of mine in Korea some 3 bars of sin cleansing soap. Here it's called Wash Away Your Sins Multi-Pack Cleansing Bars. Here is a Wash Away Your Sins Change Purse. Spend your way to a cleaner conscience. And here are some towelettes, these Wash Away Your Sins towelettes. Save yourself and save others. Heavenly scented, handy, reliable, antibacterial, kills sin on contact. And that's from my crazy friend Mark and his wife in Korea. So, yes, as if I would use that soap if I thought it would really do any good way down deep inside. Last week we were right in the middle of one of Job's answers to his three friends. Remember that Job has these three absolutely wonderful friends. To go back a little bit to the beginning of how all this got going, remember that it was God who initiated all these tragic events in Job's life, and God did that by talking to the devil and commending Job's moral, godly life to Satan. And Satan said he didn't believe it, that he thought Job was really phony and that a few trials would easily cause Job to curse God. And so God said to Satan, okay, go at it. And in round one, the devil took away all of Job's possessions, killed his 7 sons and 3 daughters, and reduced him to total poverty. And the result was that Job did not then curse God. He just said, God gives and God takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And Satan then decided round two that people can lose their properties and still not lose their faith. And so in round two, God gave the devil permission to take away Job's health short of ending his life. Not allowed to end his life, but could strip away his health. And the next thing that happened to Job is deathly ill with terrible boils all over his whole body. And so miserable, the only comfort he has is by going out in the garbage dump and pouring ashes over himself and scraping himself with potsherds. And he's absolutely miserable. His wife isn't a lot of help. She has her own problems to deal with. And now the worst thing of all are Job's wonderful godly friends who come along to make life 10 times miserable. This is the worst of all the trials. And so the devil is now going to turn these three good friends loose. These friends come from afar, from distant places. They know Job, they're fellow believers. And they come to comfort him and to console him, except that when they see his condition, that this friend who was rich and prosperous is now reduced to groveling in the ash heap, they're absolutely stunned. And they end up not offering him much consolation, and instead heaping on him a good deal of abuse and criticism, which only gets worse. Each of these three friends gets 3 cracks at Job to speak to him, and Job answers them 3 times, and we're right in the middle of one of those. We stopped at the end of chapter 13. In the middle of all these things, Job is crying out in pain and in agony. He answers his friends, but he's also talking to God. And he's talking to God rather honestly about the hurt and the pain that he suffers. Job does not see himself as without sin. That's one thing to remember here. Job, however, believes that he is righteous before God. We already know that he is, that God has pronounced him righteous, so that he really has a relationship with God. If there's sin in his life, he's not aware of what it is. And in the course of the conversation, his friends haven't pointed out anything that hits the spot that really that really hits home with his conscience. So all of their accusations are only making his situation worse. But he's quite ready to have God point out sins to him if he's guilty of sin. So he's not, in that sense, closed-minded about it. He, right through it all, he still puts his trust in God. He's still depending on God no matter how bad it gets. So he has not cursed God, though there's plenty of complaining to God going on, and he's at times full of total despair. And in the middle of his dialogues, he often breaks off, stops talking to his friends, and starts talking to God rather openly. In the chapters 12 and 13, we are in the middle of a reply from Job to Zophar, his friend Zophar the Zealous. And just to review a little bit, in chapter 13, Job says to his friends, look, I know all the same things you guys. We went to the same seminary. We grew up in the same church. They didn't have churches then. He says, I'm not inferior to you. And so far you haven't told me anything that I don't already know that is, in fact, common knowledge. So far I'm waiting for you to say something that fits my situation. And he's kind of complains about them. He says, you guys are forgers of lies. You're worthless physicians. Oh, that you would be silent. It would be your wisdom if you would only shut up. You guys would shut up and it'd be better. You remember Abraham Lincoln said something to that effect? It is better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. So that may be where that Abraham Lincoln got that. So Job would like his friends to shut up, and then he'd have at least some peace and quiet, and he wouldn't have their constant accusations. Job accuses his friends of defending God as if God needed any defense. You guys have developed a theological position, and you're standing on that ground, and you won't budge an inch. You won't consider any other option. And really, as far as I'm concerned, these are just a bunch of platitudes. And we've already talked about the fact that sometimes the best thing you can do when the friend is hurting is just to listen and hear out their side of the story and show them some empathy and pray with them. And not jump to conclusions and look at your own life first. And good lessons here on how we deal with somebody, because these friends have jumped to the conclusion, all of them have jumped to the conclusion, there's only one explanation for Job's troubles. He has sinned. And God is punishing him, or God is chastening him, and just as soon as he admits his sin, God will fix everything and restore his life. And that's the kind of position they all settle into. And will they budge on that? No, they don't budge at all. Chapter 14. Let's look at chapter 14, which is where we kind of stopped. This is Hebrew poetry, remember, and parts of it are very obscure and parts of it are very difficult, so your translation may read a little differently. And this is the kind of book you want to meditate over and pray over. And I have two or three commentators, and they all seem to disagree on things. So we really need the Spirit of God to help us with this. In chapter 14, Job is continuing with the despair that he feels. And you and I would surely feel this way if we had suffered this kind of horrendous series of devastating losses. Man who is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue. Do you open your eyes on such a one and bring me to judgment with yourself? How can a clean thing come out of an unclean? No one. Look, you guys, we're all in the same boat, aren't we? Isn't life short and brief for you too? I'm not the only one that's vulnerable to trials and difficulties. Since man's days are determined, the number of his months is with you. You have appointed his limits so that he cannot pass. Look away from him that he may rest, till like a hired man he finishes his day. Let me get through the rest of my life and stop bugging me. You guys are going to have to answer to God too sometime. That's kind of his idea. He says there's hope for a tree if it's cut down. it might sprout again. Its tender shoots will not cease, though its root may grow old in the earth and its stump may die in the ground. Yet at the scent of water it will bud and bring forth branches like a plant. That kind of reminds you of Nebuchadnezzar. Remember Nebuchadnezzar many, many years later? Had this happened to him by divine decree, he was arrogant, proud monarch over Babylon, and God chopped him down like a tree and bound the stump so that at the end of 7 years the tree was allowed to come back to life. So Job feels like he's a tree that's been cut down, and there's a little bit of hope that maybe a few green branches would come forth again. Wouldn't be the total end of his life, but mostly man dies and is laid away. He breathes his last, and where is he? As water disappears from the sea and a river becomes parched and dries up, so man lies down and does not rise. Till the heavens are no more, they will not awake nor be aroused from their sleep. What is the end of man? What have we all got? It's all the end of our lives, we just lie down and die. And what purpose is it? The futility, the fatalism, the despair that he feels, the hopelessness. It comes through again. And now he talks to God, oh, that you would hide me in the grave, that you would conceal me until your wrath is past, that you would appoint me a set time and remember me. If a man dies, will he live again? Remember the concept of the grave or Sheol in the Old Testament is just that it's just dying. It's just the underworld. There's no clear teaching in the Old Testament about resurrection or life beyond the grave, but Job nevertheless holds out that there's going to be some eventual vindication, that perhaps somehow there's some hope for him. The grave would be a real relief. It would be nice to die and get this over with, but he hopes that wouldn't be the end of his whole life. If a man dies, will he live again? All the days of my hard service I will wait until my change comes. You shall call and I'll answer you. You will desire the work of your hands. For now you number my steps, but do not watch over my sin. My transgression is sealed up in a bag and you cover my iniquity. You're keeping score on all of us, and it'd be nice to have life all over with so that there weren't any more sins accumulating and it was all packaged up and done with and it was all closed. But as a mountain falls and crumbles away, and as a rock is moved from its place, as water wears away stones, and as torrents wash away the soil of the earth, so you destroy the hope of man. The whole universe is kind of running down, and the hills are eroding away, and the creeks dry up, and life is utterly futile, and we all get old and gray and die. You destroy the hope of man. That's how he feels. You prevail forever against him and he passes on. You change his countenance and send him away. He feels like God's an adversary, that God's his opponent, his enemy. So he honestly feels. His sons come to honor and he does not know it. My descendants after me may be famous, but I'm not going to be around to enjoy all their fame. Eventually they're going to be brought low and I won't know anything about that. His flesh will be in pain for it, and his soul will mourn over it. That is, I'm going to be dead and gone, and I have no idea how my descendants are all going to turn out. But their lives are also going to come to an end. The futility, the emptiness here just comes through. This is pretty sad. Now we get round two from Eliphaz, the eloquent. He started out, he's probably the oldest of the friends. He's started out being fairly polite. He's not polite anymore. There's no comfort in him. He's less frightening. He's ferocious. He's nasty. Your best friend turned against you here. Just absolutely when you're vulnerable. Job's guilty, and his friends are all convinced of that. And when your friend is guilty, you just go ahead and heap on the abuse. He's down and out, so stomp on him. Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, should a wise man answer with empty knowledge and fill himself with the east wind? Actually, the word there is belly wind, intestinal gas, really. Earlier, the previous statement was that you're a bag of wind, and now it's even worse than that. That's just gas. You're just gas. All your words, all these words that you're speaking out are just empty words. A wise man wouldn't talk that way with empty knowledge and fill himself with the east wind. Should he reason with unprofitable talk or by speeches with which he can do no good? All of your speeches aren't accomplishing anything. What you've got to do is repent, so let's get on with that part of the whole business here. You cast off fear and you restrain prayer before God. Your iniquity teaches your mouth and you choose the tongue of the crafty. Your own mouth condemns you and not I. By your own words, you're guilty before God. Look at the arrogance. Look at the way you talk to God, the way that you're insulting to the Lord. That's proof enough of your guilt right there. Nobody would talk to God that irreverently the way you do. That's the kind of tone of things here. Are you the first man who was born, or were you made before the hills? Have you heard the counsel of God? Do you limit wisdom to yourself? So you think you're so smart, eh? Earlier, these guys have relied on their own wisdom, and they've called on the wisdom of the fathers, all his testimony against Job, and they come right back around with that same thing. You act like you're the smartest man in the whole world in proclaiming your innocence and talking to God the way you are. Who do you think you are? Of course, the implication is that we know more than you are, and we're better, we're on a moral higher ground than you are, Job. Have you heard the counsel of God? Do you limit wisdom to yourself? What do you know that we do not know? What do you understand that is not in us? Of course, Job has just pointed that out about them in the previous speech. I know the same things you guys know. Now they throw that right back at him. Both the gray-haired and the aged are among us, much older than your father. Look, we got some pretty wise friends that are a lot older than you are, and we get our wisdom and learning from them, and just because we're older, our experience makes us superior. You know how people who get older, they think they know more? Sometimes they do, but not always. Are the consolations of God too small for you, and the word spoken gently with you? You know, we've been talking with you gently. Well, they haven't been talking to Job gently at all. They've been insulting him with all their innuendo and cutting him down. Why does your heart carry you away, and what do your eyes wink at that you turn your spirit against God? Why, it's perfectly clear. You're in open rebellion against God. Anybody can see that's absolutely the way it is. That you turn your spirit against God and let such words go out of your mouth. They're taking issue with the way Job is talking to God. Is Job doing anything wrong in the way he's talking with God? Not so far. He's just simply being honest and pouring out his heart to God, not insulting God. He's not blaspheming God, but his friends think he is. They've jumped to that conclusion. What is man that he could be pure, and he who was born of a woman that he could be righteous? If God puts no trust in his saints and the heavens are not pure in his sight, how much less man who is abominable and filthy, who drinks iniquity like water? Job, that's what you're like. That's the idea. But not us. I will tell you, hear me. What I have seen, I'll declare. What wise men have told, not hiding anything received from their fathers, to whom alone the land was given and no alien passed among them. The wicked man writhes with pain all his days, and the number of years is hidden from the oppressor. And so you're wicked, Job, and you're writhing in pain. See, it all fits together. Well, that's sometimes true of some wicked people that they writhe in pain, but often it's not. Oftentimes, wicked people live in lives of luxury and splendor and don't suffer at all, and oftentimes innocent people suffer. So you see, this wisdom's all partial and incomplete. So these guys like to describe the state of the wicked and identify Job as in being in that class. Not very nice. Dreadful sounds are in his ears. In prosperity, the destroyer comes upon him, the wicked man. He does not believe that he will return from darkness. He watches for the sword. He wonders about for bread, saying, "Where is it?" He knows that the day of darkness is already at his hand. Trouble and anguish make him afraid. They overpower him like a king ready for battle. That's all the thing that Job's going through. Job's going through all that kind of anguish. But it's not because he's wicked. So they're just heaping it on. Trouble and anguish make him afraid. They overpower him like a king ready for battle. He stretches out his hand against God, and he acts defiantly against the Almighty. Job, you're defying God. You're insulting God. That's obvious to us. Running stubbornly against him with his strong embossed shield. You're just like a soldier attacking God, tilting at windmills. That's his conclusion. And Job, you're self-indulgent. Though he has covered his face with fatness, the wicked man, and made his waist heavy with fat, he dwells in desolate cities, in houses which no one inhabits, which are destined to become ruins. You were once rich and you had plenty, and now look at you. It's because you're wicked that all this bad stuff has happened to you. He will not be rich, nor will his wealth continue, nor his possessions overspread the earth. He, the wicked man, will not depart from darkness. The flame will dry out his branches. By the breath of his mouth he will go away. Let him not trust in futile things, deceiving himself. Futility will be his reward. It will be accomplished before his time, and his branch will not be green. He will shake off his unripe grape like a vine, and cast off his blossom like an olive tree. For the company of hypocrites will be barren, and fire will consume the tents of bribery. They conceive trouble and bring forth futility. Their womb prepares deceit. All these descriptions of what wicked people endure and the suffering and the hardship, that applies to you, Job. See that in there?
I think you said last week that none of the friends actually prayed to God.
None of the friends came to Job and said, "We're really sorry for what you're going through. Let's talk about it a little bit, and before we start, let's pray." None of these friends is willing to raise the possibility that they could be wrong. No empathy. They take this high moral position of we're superior. See that in there? Job is judged no matter what he says. And this is when Jesus said, "Judge not that you be not judged. With the judgment you dish out to others, you yourself will be judged." That's the kind of judgment where you put yourself on a higher moral ground than the person that you're looking down on and insulting and belittling. And we're going to find out at the end of the story, reading ahead, that Job's friends are wrong on all counts, that they haven't got any of this right. That Job has been saying things that God's pleased with all along. God finds no fault in Job, and all the things that Job is saying are fine. It's the three friends that have got it wrong. But what an agony to go through this with your trusted friends. What an agony to have your friends treat you this way, and simply because they've judged you on your circumstances. How easy it is to do when somebody's down and out to start looking for the sin in their lives that's caused it. Right? Yes, ma'am. He did, yes. Job, he has in a sense said that. He said, "You guys are self-righteous, leave me alone." He's essentially said that. Shut up. Politely.
So that was last chapter.
We get a little bit more of that up here in a minute. Because now we get chapter 16, we get Job another answer from Job. Job answered and said, "I've heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all." "I've heard stuff like this before. You guys are a bunch of losers. What a miserable... I thought you came to comfort me or to offer me some hope. Shall words of wind have an end?" Is this just going to go on forever? Are you never going to change your tone ever? "What provokes you that you should answer? I also could speak as you do. If I was in your position... If you were the guys in the ash heap and I was your friend, I could make the same speech. I could come and say the same sorts of things about you. You're in trouble because you've sinned. I could speak as you do. If your soul were in my soul's place, I could heap up words against you and shake my head at you and shake my finger at you." And then Job says, instead, I wouldn't do that. He said, "I would strengthen you with my mouth and comfort you The comfort of my lips would relieve your grief. There's one difference. If I caught you in the same situation, and I could treat you as badly, but I would at least remember to comfort you and be your friend and show you my friendship, which you haven't done. So Job really knows what's going on, and in a similar situation, would he comfort his friends who were accusing him? He would. So he's a man of great moral character then. Though I speak, my grief is not relieved. And though I remain silent, how am I eased? Now here's another place where he sort of switches over and starts talking to God. But now God has worn me out. I'm getting tired, Lord. You have made desolate all my company. You sent these guys into my life, and it's only made my trial all the worse. You shriveled me up. It is a witness against me. My leanness rises up against me and bears witness to my face. He tears me in his wrath and hates me. He gnashes at me with his teeth. My adversary sharpens his gaze on me. He feels very much like he's being attacked by God, as if God was a wild animal. But it feels like. They gape at me with their mouth. They strike me reproachfully on the cheek. They gather together against me. Have you ever heard anything like that anywhere else in the Bible? Psalm 22? That's exactly what Jesus felt when he was on the cross carrying the sins of the world. He felt very much like wild animals were attacking him, and the full wrath of God was poured against him. So that very much anticipates the sufferings of the Lord Jesus later on. They gape at me with their mouth. They strike me reproachfully on the cheek. They gather together against me. God has delivered me to the ungodly. God has delivered me up to you guys. God's given me the additional problem of putting me in your hands on top of all my other sufferings. He's given you guys here to be my comforters to make things worse. That's the idea. I was at ease, but God has shattered me. He has also taken me by the neck and shaken me to pieces. He has set me up for his target. His archers surround me. He pierces my heart and he does not pity. He pours out my gall on the ground. He breaks me with wound upon wound. He runs at me like a warrior. That's what he feels like. Feels like he's attacked by wild beasts and shot at by archers and assaulted by warriors with swords. That he's just being hacked to pieces and shaken all over the place. What he feels like. I have sewn sackcloth over my skin and laid my head in the dust. My face is flushed from weeping, and on my eyelids is the shadow of death. Although no violence is in my hands and my prayer is pure. Have you heard that before? Jesus said that, didn't he? O earth, do not cover my blood and let my cry have no resting place. Surely, even now, my witness is in heaven, and my evidence is on high. I don't have all the facts, but surely God does, and surely somehow God's going to vindicate me. See that little bit of hope that kind of breaks in? I don't have the facts, and I don't know why I'm suffering. So far, my friends haven't given me any help with this, but God knows the whole picture. My friends scorn me. My eyes pour out tears to God. Oh, that one might plead for a man with God as a man pleads for his neighbor. For when a few years are finished, I shall go the way of no return. Once again, we saw this a little bit before. I wish I had a mediator. I wish I had a defense attorney. I wish I had somebody who could take my case before the courts of heaven and get me some answers. That's longing for a mediator. We talked about that last week. Do we have a mediator? Do we have a defense attorney? Do we have somebody that understands the human condition? We do. We have Jesus. When we go to God, we go to Jesus, the man, Christ Jesus, who understands sorrow and suffering and temptation and human emotions and human frailty, who identifies with us on the human level and who takes our case to God. We do have a mediator. Job's going to find that out in the course of this book. That's going to be one of the great things that he discovers in this trial. This is not a purposeless amount of suffering he's going through. God has some great high purpose in all this suffering. It isn't just some kind of little gambling game between God and the devil. God doesn't let you suffer for nothing. There we are. Okay, here's the beginning of the story. Job was at ease. What more could he ask for with his prosperity and his family and his friends and his wonderful 7 sons and 3 daughters? What more could he ask for? And then God takes it all away from him totally in one fell swoop in order that the end of the story he could be blessed even more. So there is, God has something in mind by allowing this horrible set of catastrophes. Well, right now you certainly wouldn't see that, would you? And Job doesn't see it. All he sees is that he can't wait till the rest of his life is over and he's dead. He doesn't see any way out. You and I wouldn't see any way out except we kind of could read ahead a little bit. How would you feel like if you're in this situation? Especially with such nice, comforting friends coming to visit you. My spirit is broken. My days are extinguished. The grave is ready for me. Are not mockers with me? And does not my eye dwell on their provocation? My friends are just mocking. Now put down a pledge for me with yourself, Lord. Please, if you could clear my account, I'd be very grateful. Who is he who will shake hands with me in friendship? Can we resolve this, Lord? Can we shake hands over this? Can we conclude this deal? I'm so alone and so helpless, and my friends don't help at all. You have hidden their heart from understanding. My friends don't get it. They're not of any help. Therefore, you will not exalt them. They're not going to get high rewards at the end of this story. He who speaks flattery to his friends, even the eyes of his children will fail. I don't want to be flattered either. I don't want a bunch of people to come along and flatter me either, but neither has the criticism of my friends helped me in the least bit. But he has made me a byword of the people, and I have become one in whose face men spit. The whole town's listening in this conversation. The whole village, all the people around are believing the testimony of Job's friends. Job's reputation is ruined in the community. He's now publicly humiliated and rejected. So the opinion is turning against him, as it did with Jesus. He has made me a byword of the people. I have become one in whose face men spit. My eye has also grown dim because of sorrow. All my members are like shadows. Upright men are astonished at this, and the innocent stirs himself up against the hypocrite. Yet the righteous will hold into his way, and he who has clean hands will be stronger and stronger. But I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep my trust in God. I'm not going to renounce God, no matter what. You get a little, see what the core of Job's heart's all about. But please come back again, all of you. I'll not find one wise man among you. My days are past. My purposes are broken off. Even the thoughts of my heart, they change the night into day. The light is near, they say, in the face of darkness. If I wait for the grave as my house, if I make my bed in the darkness, if I say to corruption, you are my father, and to the worm, you are my mother and my sister, where then is my hope? As for my hope, who can see it? Will they go down to the gates of Sheol? Shall we have rest together in the dust? He'd like to have some companionship in his suffering. He'd like to have some real friends there, and they're not there. Okay? See the theme here of despair and depression. Bildad comes in. This is another nice guy. Bildad the Shuhite answered and said, how long until you put an end to words? Job, stop all this pointless talk. Gain understanding and afterwards we'll speak. Wise up and then we'll really be able to teach you some good stuff. Why are we counted as beasts and regarded as stupid in your sight? Job hasn't called them beasts, or he hasn't called them stupid. It didn't even come close to that. You who tear yourself in anger, shall the earth be forsaken for you, or shall the rock be removed from its place? His friends are feeling insulted, and they're getting their feelings hurt because of Job's complaints and the fact that he won't listen to them. The light of the wicked indeed goes out, and the flame of his fire does not shine. The light is dark in his tent, and his lamp beside him is put out. And Job, since you are wicked, your light's going out. That's the implication there, hidden in there. The steps of his strength are shortened, and his own counsel casts him down. He's cast into a net by his own feet. He walks into a snare. The net takes hold of him by the heel, and a snare lays hold of him. A noose is hidden for him on the ground, a trap for him in the road. Terrors frighten him on every side and drive him to his feet. His strength is starved, and destruction is ready at his side. It devours patches of his skin. The firstborn of death devours his limbs. He is uprooted from the tent of the shelter of his tent. They parade him before the king of terrors. They dwell in his tent who are none of his. Brimstone is scattered on his habitation. His roots are dried out below. This is the wicked man. And he's just making the wicked man look more wicked, and the fate of the wicked is more terrible than previously stated. His branches wither above. The memory of him perishes from the earth. Job, you're going to die and be forgotten. Nobody's even going to remember you. He has no name among the renowned. Job, you thought you were well known in the community. We're erasing that from the record. You're driven from light into darkness, chased out of the world. You have neither son nor posterity among the people. That's a low blow, because Job's family's been killed. He's lost his sons and daughters. You have no future, Job. Nothing remaining of your dwellings. Quite true. He'd been reduced to poverty. Those in the west are astonished at his day, and those in the east are frightened. All your friends in all the countries are looking at the downfall of this once great man, and they see that he's fallen into oblivion because he's evil and wicked. Surely such are the dwellings of the wicked, and this is the place of him who does not know God. And the bottom line, Job, is you don't even know the Lord. That's a logical conclusion, or you would have repented by now. So we just conclude you probably didn't know the Lord in the first place. Just fake. How's that for friends? Job, we'll do one more chapter and quit here. That's for today, and see if you have some thoughts. Job answered and said, "How long will you torment my soul and break me in pieces with words? These 10 times you have reproached me. You are not ashamed that you have wronged me, and if indeed I have erred, my error remains with me. If I'm wrong, you haven't pointed it out yet. If I need correcting, you haven't told me how. And I'm smart enough to recognize the truth if I had heard it from any of you. I haven't heard you say anything that fits my case yet. Are you going to torment me again and again and again with your accusations? If indeed you magnify yourselves against me and plead my disgrace against me, know then that God has wronged me and has surrounded me with his net. If I cry out concerning wrong, I'm not heard. If I cry aloud, there's no justice. He has fenced up my way so that I cannot pass. He has set darkness in my paths. He has stripped me of my glory and taken the crown from my head. He breaks me down on every side, and I'm gone. My hope, he has uprooted like a tree. He has kindled his wrath against me. He counts me as one of his enemies. His troops come together and build up the road against me. They encamp all around my tent. He has removed my brothers far from me, and my acquaintances are completely estranged from me. My relatives have failed. My close friends have forgotten me. Those who dwell in my house and my maidservants count me as a stranger. I'm an alien in their sight. I call my servant, and he gives no answer. I beg him with my mouth. My breath is offensive to my wife. I'm repulsive to the children of my own body, even young children. Little kids of the neighborhood despise me. I arise and they speak against me. All my close friends abhor me, and those whom I love have turned against me. My bone clings to my skin and to my flesh, and I have escaped by the skin of my teeth." Pretty horrible how he feels about himself now. "Have pity on me. Have pity on me, O you my friends, for the hand of God has struck me. Why do you persecute me as God does and are not satisfied with my flesh? all of this that's come upon me has come on me from God. You guys have only made it worse. Can't you identify with me a little bit and offer me a little comfort or a little hope, a little encouragement? Can't you just sit with me during this rough time? I don't have all answers. And it's God in His sovereignty who's allowed all this, so He's not denying that God's sovereign in this. Oh, that my words were written. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book. That they were engraved on a rock with an iron pen and lead forever. I'd like my words to be written down so permanently that they couldn't ever be erased. Well, of course, they have been. We're 4,000 years later. We're reading Job's words. So God saw to it that His words were here for us. Then He says, I know that my Redeemer lives, my kinsman Redeemer lives, and He shall stand on the earth at last. And after my skin is destroyed, this I know, that in my flesh I will see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold, and not another, how my heart yearns within me. Now that sounds right away. The trouble is, the Hebrew here is very obscure. But the positive reading on this would be the reading that he realizes that he does have an advocate, a kinsman, redeemer, and that God redeems, and that he does have hope beyond the grave. That's the idea here. I know that my Redeemer lives, and that I shall stand with him at the resurrection at the last day. That's the positive meaning. It can't be totally certain that that's what the Hebrew actually says, but it seems to suggest that. Little hope breaking in here to his dark world. If you should say, how shall we persecute him, since the root of the matter is found in me? Be afraid of the sword for yourselves. Wrath brings punishment of the sword, that you may know there is a judgment. Look, you guys, if it is true that I have been laid low and judged and brought low by God, why should the same thing not happen to you? Do you not face the same judge? Do you not face the same end? Are you not also mortal? Can't you identify with me in my humanity? Take a look at yourselves, you guys, my friends. Where are you going to end up? What if you were in my situation? Okay? This is kind of sad, isn't it? To keep reading until we begin to see what this is all about. How about some questions? We do not hear the friends talking among themselves. They're not comparing notes. They're not praying still. They don't go off apparently and say, gee, are we right? Their criticism gets sharper and harsher and hard-hearted, and they're increasingly worse. So none of Job's arguments are having any effect in softening them at all. He who speaks before he clearly listens is a fool. That's from Proverbs. Yes. And why are his friends becoming harsher? It's because they're themselves being convicted by the Spirit. Does Job have an invisible companion with him that we could assume was really there the whole time identifying with him? Yes. Through our eyes, we can say that Jesus was standing right there with Job and identifying with him through everything that he's going on and defending him and justifying it. And Job doesn't know that, but we do. And Job's friends are becoming more self-righteous and more angry and more bitter because they don't like what they're hearing. The devil. What is the devil doing in here? Well, the devil, this is his, these three alleged righteous friends are instruments of the devil turning up the malice and the hatred and the accusations that the devil has. So whose side are in the flesh the whole time? Yes, ma'am. Philip Yancey's book. Yes.
And,
That's a really good question. Job's a righteous man. Yeah. How should Job be behaving any differently than he is behaving? Probably not. Is it wrong to complain to God and pour out your heart? No, it's not. Is it wrong to be honest with God? You're not insulting God. You're not blaspheming God. At the end of the book, when we get God's analysis, God will say that Job has spoken rightly of me the whole time. So God gets Job off the hook at the end of the book. What would be the best way to get healed if you found yourself in a place of great suffering like this? Asking why doesn't help. Well, all you can do is pour out your heart to God. All you can do is hang on to your faith, and all you can do is believe that God is a good God, and He's not whimsical, and He doesn't let you suffer for no reason. And the righteous suffer. John? Yes, he just pointed out a famous Jewish rabbinical saying that we ought not to say, "Why am I not suffering?" You should say, why shouldn't you be suffering? Did I get that backwards? Anyway, how come you guys are doing so well today? How come we're not all suffering like Job? Because we deserve it as much as Job, certainly. Is there a difference between complaining and blaming God? Yes, I think there would be. Where you're self-righteously you're saying that, God, you're not running the universe right. Give me a crack at it, and I'll fix it for you. And you've made some bad mistakes, Lord, and let me point out what you did wrong, and let you and me fix it the way it ought to be. That would be self-right, presumptuous, wouldn't it? All about. If the ultimate meaning in life is to be found in a personal, intimate relationship with God, and knowing God is the bottom line of what really matters, knowing God intimately and trusting Him and loving Him is what counts, then so far so good for Job, because he's being honest and real and responding to what he does know, and he lacks the answers, but he hasn't given up hope that he'll eventually get them. I suppose we're all going to have areas, unanswered questions all our lives, are we not? We're all going to have situations in our lives that we do not get answers for this side of heaven. The book of Job does not answer all suffering. It doesn't address all kinds of suffering that take place in our world. It does address the suffering of a righteous man that God finds, says is blameless. And we got to see, again, the higher purpose in all that. The theology of the friends is right, as Muriel points out. Their theology is okay. How about having all the right answers for the wrong situation? How about coming to church on Sunday and you hear this wonderful sermon and the theology is just right and it's all carefully reasoned out and it's sound but has nothing to do with your situation? It's not very real. Didn't you come to church because you wanted God to speak to you? Because you wanted answers for the things that you were hurting with? Yes, you did. How is it to misrepresent God? Is it serious to misrepresent God? Very serious. That's the worst kind of self-righteousness like these friends have. They're misrepresenting God. They're claiming to speak for God with God's authority, and they're wrong. Oh, you read ahead too. sometimes at the, yes, if you to read ahead a little bit, you'll find that God does eventually talk to Job directly one-on-one, but he doesn't go down this list of questions that Job's been raising and answer them. He answers them in a totally different way. As we'll see, this book has is well worth suffering through with Job, because the end is so great. The end of this is so positive that we just got to agonize through this torment. Okay, so far. Steve, how about you praying us out?